John Gilmore and friends make your weekday afternoons.
John Gilmore
on BBC Radio Lancashire.
Bit of a change to the, as they say, the advertised programme. Usually we do an hour of music and memories and a few number ones, but my first guest this afternoon, well, he's a legend in his field. Ever since he could stand up, John McGuinness has been riding motorcycles, and his passion for motorsport has seen John earn 44 podium finishes at the Isle of Man TT races, 23 of those as winner, putting him within reach of Joey Dunlop's record of 26 victories. In fact, he's become such a part of the TT that a corner on the course was named McGuinness in 2013. His autobiography, Built for Speed, is released today. I'm pleased to welcome John McGuinness into the studio for a chat about his life in motorsport between now and 1 o'clock. We finally made it, John. It's been about 3 years in the making, this, hasn't it? You and I getting together in the studio.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? I don't know why we haven't done it any sooner, mate. You know, it's only a little spin down the road. But it's nice to be in here and have a chat about it. You know, it's a big day for me. Publication day for my book, my autobiography. I'm a bit nervous about it. And, you know, it's took a long time coming, but I'm dead proud of it. I think it's got it all covered in there from being born in Morecambe, you know, Lancashire lad, and proud of it, and being born by forcep delivery in the Queen Victoria Hospital in Morecambe to the present day, you know, the ups and downs, the trials and tribulations and tears and sadness and happiness of my life and my racing career. So, I mean, yeah.
You know, to pardon the pun, but it's not been an easy ride, has it, for you?
No, it hasn't, you know, but I always had visions of being a world champion TT winner and, you know, from as far back as I can ever remember. My earliest memory is my old boy basically plonked me on a motorcycle on Whiteland Industrial Estate in Morecambe, and I think it was probably to get rid of me. I was probably mithering him, and he's put me on this little Italia jet, and on the back cover there's a picture of me on the Italia jet doing some jumps, and like Evel Knievel did in the time, and off I popped around the estate. But yeah, it wasn't easy, but you know, times are tough, but we, you know, I had a dream, I had a vision, and you know, I left school and probably not with the greatest credentials, but you know, I could read and write if you like, and I went on to be a bricklayer, went to college, and my dream was always to race motorcycles, and you know, I had a bit of luck and a little bit of help, and a lot of people put in the pot, you know, from me nana to my mum to my dad to uncles, and we all scraped together and to get enough money to sort of start at the grassroots level and race bikes, and you know, it was tough, but as you're reading the book, you know, they're all in there. There's no stone unturned in there, you know.
I want to talk about your old boy, John Senior, because he had a motorcycle business, didn't he? Sold cars and motorcycles.
Yeah, my dad was a wheeler and a dealer in the day, and he sold scooters and service scooters, MOTs, bikes, and he'd have a go at anything. He'd have a go at buying and selling a van or a car, or you know, I'd go to the auctions with him as a kid, and we'd buy bikes or cars and get them home as you did, and tea cut them, polish them, and do them up, and then try and make a quid, you know. But it was called McGuinness Motorcycles. It was, you know, a lockup that's sadly no longer there. It was Gott's Chickens, and then it was, I think it's a car wash now, but it's gone now. But it was McGuinness Motorcycles, and, you know, that's where I spent most of my time, poking around with engines and getting oily fingers, and, you know, it was 1976, I think my dad stuck me on a bike, so yeah, over like 40 years ago, so it's and we're still at it.
John Gilmore
on BBC Radio Lancashire.
John McGuinness with me this afternoon, the launch today of his autobiography, Built for Speed. Let's go back to the early days, John, growing up in the Morecambe-Heesham area. What was school like? You mentioned you weren't keen, but I think you like the Bunsen burners.
Do you know what? I didn't mind school. I went to Sandilands County Primary School, which was a stone's throw from where I lived on Granville Road, and I can't remember it, but my parents told me that we had a old German shepherd that used to walk me to school every day and make sure I got into the school okay, then walk back. You know, in them days, the great big dogs roaming the streets, weren't there? But I went to Sandilands, and I enjoyed it. You know, growing up in Morecambe was a good place. You know, they had You know, you go and build a sandcastle, couldn't you, on the beach? You know, you could get an ice cream, you get some candy floss. There was fairgrounds, there was matinees on, cinemas and stuff. And, you know, it's lost its way a little bit, but I'm still proud of my roots and where I come from. And then I went to Heysham High School and, you know, I remember building stuff for my motocross bike. I built a stand there, I built an exhaust for my AP50 Suzuki, and had all sorts of different models of exhaust. We never made it go any faster, but we tried to make it go quicker. But, you know, it was okay. I mean, I had a few little ding-dongs with a few of the teachers, and all I was talking about was motorbikes, and they was telling me to, you know, check my algebra. But my school report's actually in the book. There's a couple of reports in there that are quite funny that actually mention if I put my mind to the work, I'd be okay instead of thinking about motorbikes. So it's, you know, my English teacher there said I would never make anything out of anything, but it's there you are, proof in the pudding.
Lovely story in the book how you stayed off school one day with your mates in your school uniforms. You were at the Arndale Centre, I think, and the police.
Okay. They did, yeah. I thought it was Jack the Lad and, you know, me, Jason Morgan and a couple of other boys, we bunked off. And first time I'd ever done it as well. And, the police sort of started questioning us and we were tripping ourselves up, telling a few we'd come from a different school and one thing another. And in the end, we had to hold our hands up and I got escorted back to Heysham High. And when I got home, my parents were told, and you know, it was my dad used to say, you better get up them stairs. And I couldn't get up them stairs fast enough. I don't know when he was racing up the stairs to give me a belt. But, I only did it once and once only. And it was not a great feeling being in the back of a police car.
Did it frighten you, the police frighten you, did that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a chap in a uniform and you're in trouble. And you've been caught. It's, you know, helped me end up in the end. And that's, I think, yeah, how you learn, you know, that... It was just, that was it. I got my telling off and I never did it again.
Yeah. You were singing the praises a little earlier of Morecambe. I mean, you obviously love Morecambe. You're a great ambassador for the town because every interview you do, you always mention Morecambe, don't you?
Yeah, I think there's nothing, you know, you've got to be proud from where you come from, you know, and it's a good place to be brought up. You know, I was brought up properly in Morecambe and, you know, I loved it, you know. There was Heysham as well, not too far away, Lancaster, you know. And I think... it's nice to have that for the council and everybody to recognise what I've achieved for my area. And the 2007 Centenary TT, I did the first 130 miles an hour lap at the TT, and they gave me the freedom of the town, which was really special. You know,
I did an outside broadcast that afternoon. I remember there was about half a dozen blokes carrying your bike up the up the stairs at Lancaster.
Yeah, they brought my HM plant fire blade there and we got it into the council. I told them it didn't have any petrol in it, so the health and safety wouldn't go mad. And we got it in there. We actually got the old mayor to... she was a lady at the time. I said, you better get your leg over this bike. So it's probably the only time she had leg over for a while. But she was sat she sat on the old fire blade and it was great, you know. And, you know, my dad was all full of emotion. All my family was there. Some early sponsors that really made it happen for me, you know, Paul Bird, one of them from Penrith, and, you know, the people that give me that sort of, that break that I needed. You know, I was struggling away for a lot of years and nobody would tell me any different. You know, I'd save up to do one race and then maybe miss a round and then do another race and save up. And, you know, it was, I just had this dream. And and then Birdie stepped in and we got some new products and new bike, and things started moving on from there. But yeah, to get the freedom of the town was really special. I think Eric Morecambe's last guy to get it, so we're in good company there as well. So.
I mean, have you sort of shepherded any sheep around or anything?
Do you know what? I think that's the next thing we should do, me and you, Gilly. I think we should just have a bit of... I'm in my rights as well, but maybe not the rush hour getting into Lancaster. But I can drive my sheep over the Skirton Bridge into Lancaster. I've weighed them up as well. I think they're only about 30, 40 quid a piece. So we can have half a dozen fairly cheap and we'll have a day out with the sheep.
what you do mention a lot in the book is your riding pot. I've got sort of an image in my mind of a big pot that any spare money you had, and you mentioned, you know, your family gave you money as well too. Becky's family as well, they helped you. Was it a big pot or was it...
wasn't a big pot. There was probably some shrapnel in it, a few coins and that, but... It was like I say, my nana, God rest her, was probably my biggest fan, and I just wish that she was around to see what I'd ever achieved. You know, she died when I just started, you know, going okay on the road racing, and you know, she would have given me her last penny. I know that, and you know, my mum did. We all travelled. My dad worked on the gas rigs at the time, and you know, there was no mobile phones and telephones, so I'd have to ring my dad up and be at a telephone box at a certain time so I could talk about how the engine was running. And but yeah, it was a big thing. It was a big deal. Even the missus, you know, she was working as a nursery nurse, and I even managed to empty her pocket a few times to get to the races. And you know, the van was dropping to bits, the caravan at the back was dropping to bits, everything was dropping to bits around us. You know, we're cobbling things together, even the bike at times was dropping to bits. But you know, I was learning, I was understanding, I was learning the tracks, I was learning engines, I was, you know, learning the ropes. And you know, I knew that if I did get my break, which I did in 1996, that things would turn around for me. You know, I felt like there was a little bit of magic there, and I had a little bit of talent, but I just didn't have the tools to do it. But you know, it would have been, the easiest thing would have been to walk away from it. And you know, I went to Morecambe College, Morecambe College to learn to be a brickie, and I could have got the trowel out and, you know, and laid bricks and made an honest living doing that. But I wanted to be a successful bike racer. And you know, a lot of my friends were going to parties and discos and all sorts of other things, and you know, I was loading my van up to go to Cadwell. And you know, if I could pinch some diesel off the building site, or siphon some of it, or an old tractor, any old, what, didn't matter what colour it was,
red diesel.
Well, it was, yeah. I mean, I'm not proud of it, but that was the only thing I could have done to go racing. You know, it was beg, stealed and borrowed, and you know, and a lot of people behind the scenes popped a few quid in the pot for me to go racing. And it's a good job they did, and they had the faith in me, and the belief in me, and I had the belief in myself. And if I didn't, like I say, it would have been easy to walk away, and I would have never been sat here talking to you with 23 wins and an autobiography in my hand. So
96, then, you say, was the turning point. What was that turning point for you?
Well, it was I was Paul Bird, who was a huge chicken farmer. Excuse the pun, you know, Paul Bird. He bought me a new Honda RS 250. Then we did some British Championships, and we were going okay. I'd done the Northwest 200, which is a big international road race in Ireland. And then after the Northwest, I was running right at the front. I'd been mid-pack, and all of a sudden, I'm wheel-to-wheel with Joey Dunlop, Philip McCall, and all these TT winners and greats. And I'm thinking, whoa, you know, this is it. We're in. And we decided to have a late entry into the TT, which is, you know, 21 years ago now. And I said to Bertie, should we do the TT? Is it time? Let's do it. And yeah, we did it. And, you know, I got the Best Newcomer Award, and but again, I went to the TT and lost one of my closest friends, Mick Lofthouse. He was a local lad from Muzzle Twistle, actually, a local lad around here. You know, and he was one of the guys that sort of said, "Would you know, you should do the TT. You got the right attitude." And he got killed in practice, so baptism of fire. But
did you feel like packing in at that time?
I did, yeah. You know, it was a miserable week of practice. The weather was bad. It was windy, wet, dry. It was like four seasons in one day, every day. And then the race came, and you know, I spoke to Mick's family, and Arthur Lofthouse, God rest him, he says, "Get your bloody helmet on, lad, you know, and get yourself out there." And I did the race. It was a beautiful day. I finished 15th. You know, Joey won the race, and I got a nice, you know, I got a replica trophy. And you know, we're selfish as racers. You know, you put it all behind you, and you know, it's the next race. And I loved it so much, the race. That was the beginning of it. But you know, I remember saying to Birdie, he wanted me to find some sponsorship, and he wanted me to find 10 grand, and I said, "Yeah, no problem, I'll find 10 grand. I didn't have 10 quid, but I was determined to find the 10 grand.
So that pot wasn't really big, was it?
No, I didn't. And to be honest, I was going through the start of the season. I'm sort of, I had to go and hold my hand up with Birdie, and I said, "Look, Paul," I said, I'm not going to find this 10 grand, but if there's anything I can do." And to be fair, he stood by me, and I said, you know, so he had me delivering chickens and in the van, and I'd basically worked my £10,000 off what I owed him to ride in the team. But once I saw the new bike, I didn't care. I thought, I'll find 10 grand. I didn't know how I was going to find it, but he let me off a little bit of the money.
John Gilmore and Friends make your weekday afternoons.
John Gilmore
on BBC Radio Lancashire.
John McGuinness with me this afternoon. The launch today, it's launch day of Built for Speed, his autobiography. You decided the time was right, I think, last year John. So what happens when you say, right, time's right for my autobiography? Have you written it yourself or have you had it ghostwritten?
I've had it ghostwritten by a chap called John Hogan. And it's funny, I've had a lot of people come to me, approach me about doing the autobiography. And it's no disrespect to anybody else. You just got to get a good vibe, I think, and a good feeling about it. And John is a journalist who owns Superbike magazine, and he came to a race meeting when I was doing World Endurance in Qatar. We did an 8-hour race out there, and we just got on really, really well. And he was talking about the book, he was talking about this Edbury Publishers, who are a big establishment. And I said, look, John, when I do one, we'll have a chat. And I stood by my word. I always think I'm a loyal person, and I think it's worked. I think he pings off me, and I got a good feeling through him, and I think he's written how I would say it. We had fun. You've got to enjoy what you're doing, and I quite enjoyed working with it. It took a bit of time and a few tweaks and a few changes, and I think we've been honest with it as well, and it has been fun, and John's proud of it. It's the first one he's done, and do you know what? That's another reason why I wanted him to do it, because he's never done one, if that makes sense. I just wanted to be different. And there's a lot of books can say, oh, I had a soft tyre in and I went a little bit faster at this track and all that. It's not like that. It's a little bit about going right back to the grassroots and right back to the start, you know.
It's a book, I think, I'm partway through it. It's a book that will appeal to everyone, I think, won't it? You won't have to be a motorcycle fan to read it, because there's a bit of a love story in there as well, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, it touches on everything, you know. I think it's getting brought up that way, and the family thing, mum and dad splitting up, the me being with my childhood sweetheart and being successful. And I'd like people to. I looked up to people. I looked up to Joey Dunlop. I looked up to various other riders, and there's lots of them that I respected. And I want people to, should I say it, me as a bit of a role model, really. Something that you can, if you chase your dream, that you can be successful in anything you do. If you're a cyclist, a gymnast, or anything in sport, you've got to dedicate yourself to it. And that's what I want. I want the scary thing for me is somebody reading thinks it's rubbish. Then if you say 10,000 people like it, one person doesn't like it, I'd be really upset. It's really important to me. I've always been like that through my racing, and it's the failing for me that worries me. But if
you don't do failure well, then do you?
No, I'm competitive as well, but I've always prided myself on being fair, and I don't owe anybody any money, and I've been with Honda a long, long time, my helmet manufacturer for a long time, and I've worked with the same people, and I think that goes a long way, in racing, that people want to work with you. People have been different manufacturers, etc., and been through every tyre manufacturer, etc. I've just signed a 5-year deal with Honda as a Honda ambassador for the next 5 years. So, they've put a little bit back in, and, I've put my work in, and, they're giving me a little bit back as well. So if I do retire, I've got a little number for a year or two. So it's cool.
Let's talk about your idol, Joey Dunlop, because you used to get the motorcycle news. You cut photographs out of Joey. You had his name in your bedroom over your bed. What did Becky say to that when you...
Well, to be honest, our first date was quite funny, because we lived on Mallardale Avenue in Heysham. My dad, where my bike was, my motocross bike, was in Morecambe, so it's like a 20-minute walk. I said, do you want to come and see my motocross bike? And yeah, that's what it was, yeah. And then he said, do you want to come and see my trophies in my bedroom? And then stepmother was all over us, like, ooh, what are you doing up there and stuff? So I'll be okay. And we went upstairs, and she must have thought, who is this guy? There's pictures of motorbikes all over his wall, and Joey Dunlop banner up, and et cetera, et cetera. But she must have thought it was a bit weird. But that's what I was. I mean, I everybody has an idol, a hero, and sometimes you shouldn't meet them, but I watched him at 10-year-old in 1982 going down Bray Hill with Graham Crosby, Mick Grant, all these top TT winners and world champions, and then Joey's last ever teammate was me. I was his last ever teammate in 2000, so I got to watch him, follow his career, you know, be beaten by him, then beat him, and then be his teammate, and then we lost him, you know. So, you know, we could talk about Joey Forever, 5 times world champion. You know, he's won so many more races than I'll ever win in Ireland, these national races and stuff. But, you know, he was a great family man, a great ambassador for the job as well. And, you know, some of his humanity stuff he did was incredible. He got an MBE and an OBE as well. I mean, I can't get an MBE. I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but I can't get one of them yet. But, you know...
Although it does say in the book, MBE, you do have an
expert. Yeah, well, I'm a motorbike expert, so that'll do. That's my MBE. But, you know, Joey went to Romania and with aid for the kids and the orphans, etc. I mean, there's not many people would fill the van up and weld the back doors up so nobody would steal it off him and go and drop it off to the kids and stuff. So, but a great rider, a great person, very quiet. I mean, I think I was one of the lucky ones that actually got to get under his skin a little bit. I think I was just pestering him that much. He'd have to talk to me because I was nibbling away him, trying to learn something off him. But when you think, I mean, I'm 45 year old now, and he was 48. And you know, when I was his teammate in 2000. To me, he was an old man, you know, a grey-haired old man. And like now, I'm a grey-haired old man. But now I understand, you know, he still had the desire, the passion, the, you know, the enthusiasm to win. And, you know, for him to jump on a superbike and win a TT, then a 125, and then a 250 in 2000 at 48, I mean, it's incredible. So there's a little bit of time left for me yet.
John Gilmore
on BBC Radio Lancashire.
Sweet Child of Mine. That brings happy memories back for you.
Yeah, me and the bride, when we got married, that's what we walked out of the building to, skipping and singing away to it. Yeah, we just our favourite song, so it's a great one, that.
About 5 years ago you got married, yeah?
Yeah, it was, yeah, exactly. April, was it May, April? I should know, shouldn't I? April the 21st, I think it was, because I turned 40.
Make sure you get the right.
Yeah, I turned 40, and it was like, well, we'll have a double do, you know. Yeah. So in the middle of the tell again, I'd always get married in Morecambe, and good bash, yeah, good do, you know. It was, I think they were only supposed to be maybe 200 in, but I think we had about 300 in, so we had a full house, and we didn't get finished till the early hours. So, yeah, I mean... She deserves to be married, the old girl, so to be fair. You know, we've been together a long time, so we tied the knot.
You were, I think, 16. She was 13.
Yeah, that's it. We lived opposite each other, and it was, yeah, you know what it's like. We just hit it off together, and as I said before, we were off on our little first date and introduced her into motorbikes, and she's still motorbikes everywhere around the house, and every weekend there's a motorbike not too far away. But she's a great mother, and behind every man they say there's a great woman, and they're right, you know. And when I've been laid there with leg injuries, wrist injuries, I bump my head and I can't do this and I'm grumpy, and she's always been there, the rock behind me. So yeah.
Talking of bumping your heads, they X-ray your brain, do they, every how many years?
Yeah, we've done a few things, and the brain is quite a complicated bit of kit. And Dunlop Tyres have sent me on a few courses and a few to the laboratories, and they're trying to get into our heads. A few athletes. One of them was the bobsleigh gold medalist Amy Williams, and one of these batsuit flying lads, and car racers, and just sort of adrenaline sports, if you like. And I mean, we could sit here and talk about it all day, but one of the big points was that we did these activities under pressure with some journalists from different magazines, big magazines, men's lifestyle magazines, and we were 83% sharper than the journalists, so there's something going on in there.
And you've a brain of a 25-year-old, I think.
Yeah, there's a professor down in London, and he's always scratching his head with my brain. Yeah. He doesn't understand it, because I mean, I'm a bit on the heavy side, and you know, the training side of it has always been probably a bit of a problem through my whole career. I'm a bit heavy, bit lazy, if you like, and it infuriates my engineers and my bosses and stuff. They've had me on all sorts of things to try and get me to lose some weight. They even stuck some wages fines in there if I wasn't hitting targets, and I missed all my targets, so it's actually cost me money being a fat boy. But it's you know, I feel all right. You know, a happy racer is always a fast racer. You know,
I mean, you're able to turn it on, aren't you, when you know, on the starting line?
Yeah, that's right. You know, and it's 2 years ago they actually sent me to chimp management. I don't know if you've heard of chimp management. Like the inner chimp part of your brain, you know, there's the three Fs in your brain. You're like fight and fear and freeze and stuff. So, but it was quite interesting, you know, and they brought the best out of me and what you want from your racing. And, you know, I want my family to be proud. I want to win and all that. And they, you know, your head has to be in gear and you have got to switch on sometimes. Sometimes, you know, you've got to take calculated risks. Sometimes you've got to risk it. Sometimes you can't. And, you know, I've finished races where I've finished sixth and seventh and eighth. And, you know, I've really, really enjoyed it. And, you know, sometimes you just can't win them all. You know, it's sometimes on your day, you can be the best. Sometimes it's not just all the planets aren't lined up. You have to... there'll always be another day.
Yeah. TT coming soon. Before that, the Northwest 200. That's next week, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. We head out this weekend and we'll be on the bike on Tuesday. First qualifying session. Then we've got another qualifying session on the Thursday. A race on Thursday night on the 600 for a local team, the Jackson team from Preston. And then on the Saturday, the big race day on the big superbike and 600 again. But we've been busy, you know. We've been tested in Spain. We had a two-day test at Castle Coombe on the superbike. Unfortunately, I tipped off and I dislocated my left thumb, which was not much fun, I can tell you. You know, getting your thumb put back into place, it brought a tear to me. I've had a few bumps and scrapes, but that was really, really sore getting that put back in. And then we went straight to Japan to test the electric bike with my teammate. And then we had another two-day test at Castle Coombe and then a test yesterday at Aintree. And, yeah, we're putting the effort in and... we're done now, we're in. We've got to go to the races and we've got to perform this next week coming. And then, you know, if the Northwest goes to plan, we'll be in good shape for the TT.
Yeah, brand new bike for you this year as well, the Fireblade. How's that shaping up?
Yeah, the new Fireblade is it's a step forward. It's a little bit lighter, it's a little bit faster. It's got a lot of really complicated electronics on it. You know, and bikes nowadays are not throttle cables anymore with carburetors. They're all fuel injected, they're all fly-by-wire. They have a lot of complicated engine management systems, engine braking systems, air bleed, anti-wheelie, traction control and all this stuff. So we're learning, and it's a shame the bike's just come a little bit late for us to be 100% happy with it, but we're working really hard. But we've had so much success on the old Blade. I think I won 11 TTs on the old Fireblade.
Well,
so.
But was it time for a new bike for you? Yeah.
Yes.
You've been knocking on the door.
It was, yeah. I've been waiting for it. And last year, I think we did a brilliant job on the old bike. We were on the podium behind Michael and Hutchie. And, you know, it was time for a new bike. They've got the new bike, and, you know, it's difficult to tell. You can test and test and test, but when you get alongside the guys next week, we're going to find out pretty quick. And, you know, straight up to 200 plus mile an hour at the Northwest. There's no dipping your toe in. It'll be full gas on the Tuesday, and we'll be alongside all the top world-class road racers. And I'll let you know next week if we're in trouble. I'll be back.
New teammate, Guy Martin. I imagine you work well with one another.
Yeah, Guy Martin, where do you start with Guy? You know, he's a bit of a crackpot, really, but he is funny, witty, quirky, different. You know, he's a huge TV celebrity, and I don't think he actually realises how big he is. You know, he doesn't really have a telephone. He's not really up to speed with all social media and all this sort of stuff, but they love him. You know, people love him, and I like him. I like my teammates. You know, like I said earlier, I've been teammates with so many different riders, and, you know, some are not with us anymore, some have gone on to do great things, and now I'm working with Guy, and I really like his company. It's funny, you know, we went to Japan a couple of weeks ago, and he brought his gear bag. His gear bag was a sack, and we're in business class with the Japanese, and he's got a sack for his gear bag, and he had a tanker driver reflective trousers on. You know, it just looked like he'd crawled from underneath the Scania straight into a business class flight to Japan. So he is very different, but great company. And you know, like I say, he's done so many great things on telly. He's got world records for cycling, he's done some amazing stuff, but the kids never won a TT, so that is definitely going to be grinding on him, and he wants to win one.
Well, the hour's gone quick, John. Thank you very much for joining us. If you want to hear more of this, you're in Blackburn, aren't you, soon? Week on Tuesday.
Yeah.
We're doing an evening at the West Home School. We'll put all the details on, on Lancashire Action. But thanks for joining us. Best of luck for the TT for next week, and, of course, the TT as well.
Thank you.
John Gilmore on BBC Radio Lancashire.